But I do think there's a schism between clinicians and data scientists. And I spend every waking hour practically trying to bring the two sides together and trying to have the clinicians speak at what I call conversational AI through various educational activities, and then have the data scientists work closer with clinicians and not use the excuse that clinicians are too busy or not know enough AI. Because right now, too many projects and papers lead to very little clinical relevance or impact. And we really, really need to change that before everyone lose their patients and artificially create another AI winter, which nobody wants to see.
Hello and welcome to HIMSCast. 5G is coming to hospitals. We're not sure exactly when, but there's a clear interest, and it provides a lot of advantages. And you can learn more about that in some recent podcasts we've done. But today we want to zoom in on the idea of AI in healthcare, another big topic. We're going to ask the question of how can 5G support AI efforts? How can it make a difference in how AI is used in the hospital? To help me with that conversation, I have Kat Jersich, Senior Editor at Healthcare IT News. Hi, Kat.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And our guest, Dr. Anthony Chang, who is the Chief Intelligence and Information Officer at the Children's Hospital of Orange County, or CHOC. Welcome to the show, Anthony.
Thank you, Jonah. Good to be here.
Before we get to the first question, this podcast is brought to you by Verizon, delivering on the promises of digital health and shaping the future of patient care. So, give us a little bit of an opening statement on this. You're a big AI person, big AI expert. You've spoken at our AI forum. You've founded some AI companies. Have you given much thought to 5G and what it could do here?
I think 5G is a fad. No, I'm just kidding. I wanted to see your facial expression. Okay. No, I think it's going to be really a very important into the next sort of 10 years in here with AI. I think, it's really important for large image files and telehealth and virtual health now, and even really begun on wearable technology and sensor technology, streaming data in. There's going to be also AR, VR, and visual computing. All of this time, by the way. So I think it's just, timely that we have 5G on top of all of these emerging technologies. All of these are converged, but really make it all work much better, much faster, and much more accurately. I think 5G is going to be I call it the enabler of all of these things together and well together. And I think without, I can imagine that this is going to really, because the sheer volume of data, the complexity of the data, and the velocity of the data really demands 5G, if not more.
Absolutely. I'm wondering if there are any of those elements you could dig into a little bit more. You mentioned that you're seeing AI in telehealth, for example, and in virtual care. What are some existing ways that you're seeing that make a difference, especially given, we do a ton of reporting about the huge spike in telehealth that we've seen amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. And so are any of those use cases really standing out to you, especially in the last year and a half or so?
Yeah, I think we're looking into a post-pandemic era of healthcare. Typical clinic is stressed even before the pandemic, and now we're even more, and especially during this recovery phase. And I think the future is going to really demand to the virtual, which means that some of the tests, like I'm a cardiologist, so an echocardiogram will probably be a file that will be transferred. And how do you do that with something as capable as 5G to do that, and ideally in real time. So I think the paradigm of remote monitoring in real time, the wearable technology, the sensor technology, especially with our aging population, I think that whole paradigm is going to be increasingly important for the next 10 to 20 years. And I think we at the tip of the iceberg in terms of all of these converging technologies that need a 5G capability.
So let's dig into how, what we typically think of as machine learning or artificial intelligence sort of ties into this. It seems to me one aspect would be like all the data that we're bringing in through these devices or monitoring has to be processed and has to be made into something that doctors can understand. Is that an area where AI is in play?
Yes. Not just having all the data come together, but all start seeing in this decade, next, what sounds like science fiction, but it's not. It's already being done in a small way, which is trying to deliver AI to the periphery. So I know people talk about Internet of Things as an exciting area for medicine, or the medical Internet of Things, or Internet of Medical Things, however you want to call it. But I think that the real exciting thing is going to be AI as part of that. So that's Internet of Everything, where wearable technology or your heart rate and heart rhythm monitor will be analyzed at the device rather than have the data go to a cloud and then get analyzed. So I think we're going to start seeing medical devices. They'll get smarter and more capable before the end of this decade, certainly, and maybe in the next 3 to 5 years. I think MIT is already able to put a very primitive neural net into a processor, microprocessor. So I think that the day that you'll get your heart rhythm monitor to be very intelligent is right around the corner. So that's going to unload a burden from the cardiologist, because I get a lot of false positives on my phone. So I just feel like, well, this is not actually good, because I'm essentially the artificial intelligence surrogate right now as the human clinician, and I'm already inundated. So I think that's going to help the clinicians to have much better algorithms available at the device locally as part of Edge and as part of embedded AI.
If the algorithm is happening locally, is the goal that the device will just learn from its own experiences, or are they still talking to each other in a sense so that you can get the full benefit of the learnings of all of the heart monitors?
Well, ideally, you like whatever AI that's at the periphery or at the edge to have access to intelligence from other patients, ideally. But at first, I think we're going to start with probably just having insights from these local devices sent to the cloud and then get analyzed there. And eventually we're going to have extremely intelligent devices, so that the intelligence that's embedded within the wearable devices will actually, believe it or not, have the intelligence of perhaps 500 patients with the same medical condition. So it's a very, very exciting couple of decades to come in healthcare and medicine.
Do you, as a cardiologist or in general as a clinician, do you think there's any merit to concerns about getting too much information? I've heard folks say that they're worried about finding a signal in the noise, even with AI's help. And can AI be configured so that that doesn't really happen, that these devices can kind of help ferret out all of that increase in data that Jonah was just talking about?
Yeah, I think we have too little information right now, so it's all relative. I think I'm amazed that sometimes we make decisions with the small amount of information that we have, and it's not good. It's not good for our patients. So I think, fortunately, we end up doing the right thing most of the time, but certainly with medical errors and misjudgments that may not end up in a patient dying, but certainly end up with a morbidity, is vastly, I think, underestimated. I think we really need to do our patients a much better service with much more intelligent management of the data and the information, and also have our information be shared. So one of our efforts is to try to look at more innovative ways that we can share knowledge and insight without sharing data. So that would be federated and swarm learning. And I think that's tremendously exciting as well. And all of that will be enabled by 5G as well, is to share the insights without sharing the data. And I think those are very, very feasible ways to learn from all the data. So you're absolutely right. It is daunting to realize that you may not have better signals or more signals in the noise, but I think we're going to start picking up much better signals in the near future.
Can you tell us a little more about that swarm and federated, if it's not too complicated? Or try your best.
Federated learning. So we're sort of evolving from local institutions using their own data to do analytics. And then that's evolving into some machine and deep learning even at the local institution. And we're, as a result of the pandemic accelerating the process, we're now seeing groups of institutions sharing the data so that you have a central repository of data for machine and deep learning. While the advantage is that you're sharing data, the disadvantage is that some hospitals are still very hesitant to share data, not just for privacy reasons, but also for other reasons as well. So now sort of on the horizon is the interesting concept of federated and swarm learning. Both are related in terms of the principle of not sharing data, so leave data at the edge or the periphery. And in federated learning, you're sharing the weights and the parameters of the algorithms and models. So the sort of this intelligent aspect of the analytics and the algorithms. And then in swarm learning, you're actually not even sharing those. You're using blockchain to kind of keep the parameters relatively private, and that sharing the insights nevertheless. So these are all variations of a very exciting concept of not sharing data to gain intelligence, which I think is innovative and very, very powerful.
And so how might 5G enable that?
Well, you'll need really, really fast real-time transmission of data, the data insights to each other, and you may not be able to share data. So in that sense, you don't need the 5G, but I think the 5G is going to be very helpful locally when you have, remember, in the next this decade and next, we're also going to see a lot of multimodal AI. So not just looking at the hospital records, that's going to be less and less percentage-wise part of the medical records or health records. It's going to be a lot of real-time remote monitoring, a lot of medical image data, a lot of virtual health, and all of that is going to be enabled by 5G, and then the insights from that will be shared. So I think it's sort of a complementary technology that's going to be necessary to enable, you know, both federated as well as swarm learning. So exciting era for sure.
Yeah, I mean, those both sound very cool. I definitely see the need there, right, to try to limit the sharing of critical medical data. What's the situation these days with AI for clinical decision support? And the whole thing with Watson obviously ended up being sort of maybe a little too much too soon, and some of it wasn't what it was advertised to be. But is that still something that folks are pursuing? Being able to not just on a device to device level, but on a patient to patient, when you're making their treatment decisions, being able to turn data towards that.
Yeah, I think some of us always knew that Watson was promising too much and it was difficult to deliver, because we have to remember that healthcare and medicine are complex biomedical phenomena. Mm-hmm. They're not easily deconstructed into code and algorithms, and there's so much that nature has to fool us in terms of being such an unpredictable, you know, realm that we have to appreciate. And I think we do appreciate that now. And I think what we need to do is play the long game, because I think people are, especially investors, so guilty of this, expecting a quick return on the investment and something to work magically to gain a lot of market share and be able to be deployed. Well, there are a lot of limitations to that. As good as AI is, it's not very easily generalizable to other patients and other hospitals. It also decays, right? So all these model and data, as well intentioned as they are to predict morbidity and mortality, really has an expiration date, you know? And I think people underestimated how quick data and models both can decay over time. We've learned a lot these past 5 years for sure. I'm still more optimistic than ever that AI is going to be an amazing resource that we are going to appreciate even more 5 to 10 years from now and look back and say, can't believe we were just expecting AI to read, you know, x-rays, because I think we're going to be more patient and more creative with uses of AI that that we will be able to affect patient outcome. But I do think there's a schism between clinicians and data scientists, and I spend every waking hour practically trying to bring the two sides together, as you know, Jonah, so through HIMSS and trying to have the clinicians speak at what I call conversational AI through various educational activities, and then have the data scientists work closer with clinicians and not use the excuse that clinicians are too busy or not know enough AI. Because right now, too many projects and papers lead to very little clinical relevance or impact. And we really, really need to change that before everyone lose their patience and artificially create another AI winter, which nobody wants to see. So, yeah, and it's a shame, because I know the topic today is 5G, and 5G is like going to put all of these new technologies on steroids in terms of enabling everything and enabling data input for AI. And it would be a shame if we not allow this AI resource to really come to fruition and deliver what I think will deliver, you know, within a decade.
So given that steroid environment that you just said about 5G.
Not to be medical, yeah. But it's amazing. It's amazing what 5G is going to do to the 3 to 5 related technologies.
So not a fad, in other words.
Right.
You totally fooled me with that, by the way. Anyway, I
don't see your facial expressions.
So. Yeah, poker is not my strong suit.
We're already thinking 6G, right? I mean, 5G is already, some people are already thinking, well, 5G, okay. Mm-hmm. What about 6 and 7G?
Oh, boy. Well, given that environment, I've been doing a lot of reporting also, and I'm sure you've heard about this too, both of you, about bias in AI. And you kind of touched on this a little bit with regard to decay, but I do fear sometimes that a layperson might interpret AI results as sort of infallible, that there's in some ways too much trust, especially from someone who's not well-versed in AI. And so I'm wondering what you think data scientists can do to address issues of bias in AI, both in terms of the data inputs, but also in terms of how the tools are being used and how, and the context in which they're being used.
Yeah, I think both data scientists and clinicians need to be aware that we can automate and perpetuate bias very easily. And most of it is unintentional, actually. Mm. So we need to think about the data. And I look at mitigating bias and throughout the entire workflow of machine learning. So I think we have to look at the data going in that is labeled in such a way that it's with as little, if no bias as possible, as much as possible. We all have to think about the algorithm itself. It might perpetuate the bias, and then the output and how it relates to, you know, interventions could also be biased. So it's actually not just the data going in, which I know people often talk about, but I think it's also the models that are relating the data, and as well as the output and what we do with the output. So it's the entire workflow. And then coming back to doing additional projects with additional cohorts of patients. So I will borrow Alan Turing's words and say, why are humans trying to do something against machines when machines should actually should be deployed against machines? So I actually think that, and people are already working on this, is algorithms to look at algorithms to minimize bias. Because I do think that perhaps there's not enough human power to look at every single algorithm that's going to be in healthcare. And perhaps we do need sort of surveillance algorithms to make sure that the patient, for instance, the population demographics are reflective of the problem and the solution, and that we're not biased towards one population, or we're not basing everything on a historical cohort. You know, these are things that you can probably set up an algorithm to kind of overlook without getting humans involved in every single algorithm. It's just probably not feasible nor possible. So I do think, just like everything else in AI and healthcare and medicine, we need to have a special synergy and collaboration between humans and machines.
Well, you're definitely going to need 5G to run all those algorithms that are surveilling all the other algorithms.
Probably more. But I think, you know, and the interesting thing is, this is all exponential, right? It's not really, I call all of this exponential convergence of technologies that's going to hopefully give us real hope for the future to deliver healthcare with equity and access, right? So I work very hard on that. And as a matter of fact, we have a regional initiative to leverage AI for health. So we shouldn't be leveraging AI just for healthcare and medical care. We should leverage AI for health. And that's very exciting to me, to be able to deliver something that will monitor population health while delivering precision medicine for everyone with equity and access. So I think that's a lofty goal, but I'm getting a lot of stakeholders in Southern California very excited about it.
That's a really, really interesting stuff. I mean, I think it's so important. We always say when we have AI conferences or whatever, you have to think of it as a tool, right? It's not one product or technology. It's not a silver bullet, but it's a way of doing things. You know, it's a kind of a workhorse that can power all kinds of tools, right? And that's really come through in this conversation for me, that all of these use cases for AI, they're really just like ways that we're going to do things in the future, because of course we're going to do it with the help of a computer that, you know, can learn from data better than humans can.
But there's so much that we can do. If you look at the administrative burden in healthcare in the US particularly, we can really whittle that down very quickly, and people are starting to do that. And I think if you look at the medication errors and the procedure issues, you know, rather than shooting for curing cancer, you know, there's a lot of baseline things we can do that's going to be a lot better for everyone. You know, so I'm very optimistic, because I think more and more people are seeing that. That it's like wearing different lenses, looking at the world of healthcare and medicine. And all of a sudden, a lot of issues can be, if not completely resolved and reconciled, partly with use of machine and deep learning. I think this pandemic has really changed the mindset of a lot of clinicians in terms of looking into the future with a very open mind to solve these issues. And I see and hear more clinicians being interested in AI than ever before. And I think they realize that, just like the author Arundhati Roy writes about, you know, look at the pandemic as a portal to a new world. Not in a sort of artificial, exaggerated way, but, you know, it's a good opportunity for us to leave some of the things we need to leave behind in this old world and go into the new world with a lot of innovation and hope that we can change things for the future.
Great. Well, that seems like a great note to end on. Wonderful final thought. Thank you so much for joining us, Anthony. It's obviously been great to have you and your perspective on this stuff.
Thank you for having me, and please keep safe out there.
And of course, thank you to our sponsor, Verizon, delivering on the promises of digital health and shaping the future of patient care. As always, we'll have our show notes with some links to some coverage we've done of stuff like this, of AI and 5G. And thank you always so much for listening. Until next time, keep innovating, keep being a healthcare changemaker.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks so much.